This is station PCJ.
This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perrell.
Hello and welcome to the program. In the past, we've talked about clandestine radio setup to broadcast either to freedom fighters or people that are cut off from the rest of the world. Well, to begin today's edition of the program, that's exactly what we're going to do. IS, which has control of Mosul in Iraq, has banned music, radio, and, well, anything that most people in the area are familiar with. But a young guy who goes by the name of Mohammed decided to set up a radio station to broadcast to people within Mosul. Now, what makes this station interesting is those who still have access to mobile phones can actually call in, sometimes disguising their voice, to give detailed information on the activities that IS is up to. Mohammed spoke to the BBC's Matthew Bannister.
Life at the moment in Mosul is sort of at a standstill. There are no cars on the streets and most shops have closed. Civilians here are being really careful. They're trying not to leave their homes. Daesh has been busy preparing landmines. They're placing them inside cars and putting containers full of explosives on most main roads within the city.
So what led Mohammed to start this radio station? He's been telling me about his own journey. In June 2014, a curfew had been imposed on Mosul after rumours about IS coming to the city. Mohammed was at home watching a local TV news channel when fighters arrived and shut it down.
I was watching one of the satellite TVs, I think it was 2 a.m. And I know exactly what's the base for the TV. So by the time the TV turned off, I realized where ISIL were in the city, and they were probably 4 or 5 kilometers away from my neighborhood. So people broke the curfew and just left the city, and we were one of those.
Did you have to pack things up? Did you take any belongings with you?
Just a small suitcase. I did not have the opportunity to get more stuff. We don't have enough space, and we expected we might have to walk some time to cross some areas, so we don't want to have heavy stuff. So we took only the important parts, and we left everything else behind us because we did not expect this to be a real invasion of Mosul, and we did not expect it to take more than probably 1 or 2 days.
And so how many family members were with you at that time?
I have my mom and my dad and my sister and my aunt. The streets were jammed. There have been thousands of vehicles want to leave at the same time. And also there have been the Iraqi soldiers who were racing with civilians to leave the city. It took more than 20, 22, 23 hours to leave Mosul. It was very tough.
So what, the Iraqi soldiers were also trying to leave by the same route that you were?
They were rushing, trying to race with cars to be able to get out as soon as possible. So that picture showed that there was no real safety inside the city because we did not see any fight taking place. Many of the soldiers, when they flew, they did not even saw ISIL members. They just left the city.
You said that you didn't realize how long you were going to be away for. As you sat in that traffic, as you saw these events unfolding, did it begin to dawn on you that this might be much longer than 1 or 2 days that you were going to have to be away from Mosul?
To be honest, by then, the only thing I cared about is to get some water to my family and to be able to take them to a friend of mine who have a house nearby one of the villages I know outside of Mosul just to get some rest. I think we were all under shock. We didn't know what's happening. My family were exhausted.
So now you've settled in another place in Iraq, and we're not going to say where that is for security reasons. When you settled there, how long was it before you started to get information about what was going on in Mosul under the rule of the so-called Islamic State?
I was in touch on a daily basis with people inside Mosul because when ISIL came, there was some period of time where people were able to go back and forth to Mosul. So it wasn't isolated completely. It took them some time to start putting more restrictions and to have some barriers. At the beginning, ISIL, I think, were very smart, and the plan was they opened streets, they took all the TOLs from streets. They tried to look like they are nice.
And as time moved on, did the so-called Islamic State change their policies? Did they become more repressive of local people?
Yeah, I think the first changing point was when ISIL forced the Christians, they trapped them to leave the city. And also when they attacked Yazidis, people did not imagine that their friends and their neighbors who've been living there for years and years will be forced to leave their homes. And not only leaving homes, but ISIL were waiting for them to take all their belongings and to steal their stuff. So it was a sad moment for all Muslawis to see Christians forced to leave the city.
And we've heard reports that they imposed quite strict rules and regulations about the way people could behave. Did you hear those reports too?
They start not allowing people to smoke, not allowing people to listen to songs, to for women to wear niqab. Then they start applying what they call as Sharia law to lash people on streets or to stone women. They've started applying these things to a society that never been in similar situation.
And as you were hearing these stories, what effect did it have on you? Did it make you think, I've got to do something, I've got to try to help?
Definitely. If I'm not going to work with my friends and the other people from Mosul to help solve the problem, I don't expect anybody to come from a different country to help me.
So what gave you the idea of setting up a radio station?
I've evaluated how ISIL were capable of invading Mosul. They focus a lot on media to publish specific episodes or videos content. So ISIL were able to put the fear within the people themselves before even seeing them. When they entered the city from one neighborhood, they allowed civilians to leave and to walk to other neighborhoods. Those civilians, without them knowing, they were helping ISIL, talking about those gigantic professional fighters wearing black coming into the city. They are unbeatable. But people did not realize that spread the fear around the whole population and around the soldiers as well.
So you thought that you could use the media to fight back, that using radio was a powerful weapon against the so-called Islamic State?
I've seen the power of media, so I want to use this power. It wasn't about fighting the Islamic State back. It was more about to be with touch with the people who were left and who were abandoned by everyone else.
I wonder if it was difficult and dangerous to get close enough to Mosul to set up your transmitters so the signal could be received within Mosul.
Yeah, that was one of the challenges we had, because we want to broadcast to Mosul and to be as close as possible to the city. So we had to go very close to the front lines and to choose good locations to put the equipment we have to be able to broadcast to Mosul from distance.
Was it difficult to convince your engineers to take that trip with you?
Yeah, I remember that was one of the challenges as well, because by then nobody wants to go nearby ISIL. And I convinced them by telling them, I'm coming with you and we will all go there and we will be safe and we'll be back. A week after we first broadcast with the radio station, ISIL start jamming our frequency. By then, we're only broadcasting songs and the name of the radio station.
Presumably, just the act of playing music is a defiant act.
Definitely. People are not allowed to listen to music. They are not allowed to have CDs of music songs or to listen to in their vehicles. So we gave them the alternative. Then we changed the frequency. They jammed us again in probably 2 days. We did it again, and they changed us in a couple hours. So it becomes like a war frequency. It took us some months to put more equipment in different locations and with the right equipment. Today, we are broadcasting on 4 frequencies simultaneously.
And did you start getting calls from within Mosul? Were people able to call you despite the ban?
In the time we installed the radio station, the access to cell phones was easier. People had more access, but less people called by then. Today, there are more restrictions on calls and there is not good coverage inside the city. But we are receiving more calls from people inside Mosul with all the risk they take, and they want to express themselves through the radio station.
What sort of things do they talk to you about?
They talk to us about their daily life, about what's happening inside the city. We've started a recent program. It's a very early morning program. It's at 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. It's asking the people about why you are awake, and it's only text messages. So now people are suffering and there is a war happening inside the city. But we receive hundreds of messages from the first episode we had. People were talking about life and love, about having family, about future, about people they miss, sending greetings to their families outside of Mosul, having other people from out of Mosul sending greetings to their relative inside. When people are talking about love or what they are missing the most, it's a proof for us that there is still a life in Mosul. They are expecting to have a future and hopefully a better one.
And have the kind of things that people want to talk to you about changed since the operation to liberate Mosul began?
Yes. 3 weeks ago, people were very optimistic and happy about having the operation started. But at the same time, today I'm seeing a change in pattern. People now, they are more afraid because there are a lot of random rockets falling on people. ISILs are using people as a human shields.
What sort of examples have you heard about of that happening?
Most of the things I'm telling you is based on calls we got from the city. So the first thing, when the Iraqi troops were coming to the villages, people are staying in their homes, and they force them to move to go to the center, or when they are in the middle of a front line, they don't care about people. They shoot randomly, and they know when the Iraqi troops are going to shoot back and you'll have some casualties, that's going to be a big deal, and they are using it.
And as I understand it, journalism within Mosul is punishable by death. Presumably you have to protect the identity of your callers. What steps do you take to make sure that they're not putting themselves too much at risk?
So we ask the people, first of all, to not mention their real name and also to not mention which neighborhood they're calling from. And we give them the alternative to have the voice diagnosis if people want to change their voice. So they have that's available also.
And have you had people ringing up to tell you how much they appreciate the work that you're doing in running the radio station?
Yeah, we get these positive feedbacks on a daily basis. And also, people are risking their lives inside Mosul to call our radio station. We have a traffic on the lines by the time we are on air. But people don't give up and they stay there. They tell us, like, I've been trying 100 times to call you, you know. I've been trying to call you for 3 days. So they see it as very important to speak up on the radio station. On our behalf, we take it very seriously when people are taking that much of risk to call us.
In terms of your hopes for the radio station when it first started out, do you think you've achieved what you wanted to do?
One of the goals we had for the radio station is to break the fear. Break the fear that Daesh are using to control the society. Now, today, there is resistance happening inside Mosul. People are doing graffiti and taking footage, try to report about ISIL activities. So that was achieved because people are less scared now of ISIL than how they used to be a year ago. I think one of the goals we achieved is to help the people talk to each other in general, because most of the problems we had in the past were based on misunderstanding and people were amplifying problems. I want the whole society to understand what they can do and what they can achieve. They can do things unstoppable.
Mohammed, the creator of a radio station that broadcasts in Mosul, Iraq, to people who are living under ISIS control. He was speaking there with BBC's Matthew Bannister. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is beta to total journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Let's see how many of you recognize this voice.
There's a yearning. From the snow-topped Rocky Mountains down to the Firelands and the Falklands, from the Chinese Wall and from Alaska to the New Zealands and the Pole, from the Pacific Islands to the Strait of Dover, from the dikes of Holland to Cape Hope and to the Indies, and in between the mountains and the seas, everywhere there's a yearning for love and friendship and for peace. Not a second part. From the Great Lakes of the Northland and the Antarctic's ice and snow, from the depth of all the oceans to the surf of a blue lagoon, from the planet right to the sun god and to the craters of the moon, back down to Earth and the seven seas, everywhere there's a yearning for love and friendship and for peace.
Well, some of you may have recognized that voice right away. That is of the late Eddie Start, who created Happy Station back in 1928. Now, those who are regular listeners to PCJ Radio International may be aware of our continuing series from the Radio Netherlands archives. The program, however, didn't air in the month of October, over the extra frequencies and times that we added outside of our normal schedule. That had to do with a technical problem that existed at WRMI that we were using to relay the program to Europe and to North America. It has to do with a new playout system they have, and special programs just don't seem to be recognized by the new system. However, we have rescheduled it for this month. Actually, it's going to be airing Sunday and Monday UTC time. So, for those who were writing in and were wondering what happened to program 4, you can catch it this weekend. The times and frequencies are the following. To Europe, November 20th. That's to Europe, November 20th, UTC time, from 6 to 8 hours UTC. That's from 6 to 8 hours UTC, November 20th, to Europe on 7780 kilohertz. The program will then be broadcast to North America from 1 to 3 hours UTC, November 21st. That's to North America from 1 to 3 hours UTC, November 21st. Now, November 21st, of course, is a Monday, which means it's a Sunday evening Eastern Standard Time. The frequency for North America is 7570. So, we are rescheduling it this weekend. The program, if you probably gathered by now, is going to be on the late Eddie Start, including some rare recordings of Eddie prior to his PCJ days when he was working for the Philip Oom Romp Holland India station that was broadcast to the Dutch East Indies, as well as a full-length Happy Station show from the 1960s with Eddie Start. Now, you can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com.
11. Well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea. I like a nice cup of tea with my dinner, and a nice cup of tea with my tea. And when it's time for bed, there's a lot to be said for a nice cup of tea.
From the Radio Netherlands Archives, program 4 featuring Eddie Start this weekend, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie, right here on PCJ Radio International. Now, since we began the program about 6 years ago now, we've always brought sort of bad news every now and again about cuts that international broadcasters are making to either programming frequencies or eliminating the service completely. Well, here's a little bit of good news. BBC World Service will launch 11 new language services as part of its biggest expansion since the 1940s. Expansion is a result of a funding boost from the UK government. Languages will be targeting listeners in Nigeria, Ethiopia and Eritrea, India and Korean. The languages for Nigeria are Igbo, Pidgin, and Yoruba, Ethiopia and Eritrea, Amharic, Oromo, and Tigrinya. For India, Gujarati, Marathi, Punjabi, and Telugu. And of course, for Korea, by the way, that is North Korea, the program will be in, well, Korean. And it was also mentioning that the program for Korea, actually, which has been discussed for actually quite a few years now, will be presented in the Korean language that is more notable in North Korea. Now, since the 1950s, even though it is the Korean language, North Koreans speak, even though they understand each other, but almost there's a lot of expressions and sayings that are only known in South Korea. So they're going to be making this program especially for North Korea. Tony Hall, the Director General of the BBC, said this is a historic day for the BBC as we announced the biggest expansion of the World Service since the 1940s. The BBC World Service is the jewel in the crown for the BBC and for Britain. As we move towards our centenary, my vision is of a confident, outward-looking BBC, which brings the best of our independent, impartial journalism and world-class entertainment to 500 million people around the world. Today is a key step towards that aim. Now, there's actually some other changes that are going to be taking place at the BBC with this new budget. On Wednesday this past week, the BBC launched full digital services of its Thai program following the success of a Facebook-only pop-up service which launched in 2014. Other expansion plans include extended news bulletins in Russian with regionalized versions for the surrounding countries, enhanced television services across Africa, including more than 30 new TV programs for partner broadcasters around sub-Sahara Africa, new regional programming from BBC Arabic, shortwave and medium-wave programs aimed at audiences in the Korean peninsula, plus online and social media content, and investment in World Service English with new programs, more original journalism, and a broader agenda. Now, let's take a look, actually, at some of how much this is going to cost. The BBC World Service expansion will be £289 million, that's for 11 new languages, 12 new and expanded daily TV services, 40 languages covered after the expansion. By 2022, they'll be reaching an audience of around 500 million and will be creating 1,300 jobs, mostly non-UK. Most of them, of course, will be mostly based in other countries, along with many new jobs at Broadcasting House. Anyway, as this story actually develops and more information is made available, we will bring it to you. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. After this break, Glenn Hauser with this week's propagation forecast.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland. If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 ident and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the dxr.ca internet website. That's dxer.ca. Good listening, everyone.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called the Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called The Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
Well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through November 19th. Normal at low and mid latitudes, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through November 19th, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through November 21st, solar activity very low. Geomagnetic activity expected to increase on November 19th and 20th as Earth comes under the influence of positive coronal hole 33. Active periods are possible. From FK Yanda in Prague of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled on November 18th, 26th, 27th, December 5th. Mostly quiet on November 19th, 28th, and December 7th. Quiet to active November 20th, 24th, 29th, 30th, and December 6th. Active to disturbed on November 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and 25th. Quiet on December 1st through 4th. RSGB says you can get an initial positive propagation phase when solar plasma first hits, so watch the HF bands as the K-index first starts to rise. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field expected to be at unsettled to active levels on November 19th to 29th and December 7th to 10th, peaking with G3, strong levels likely, November 21st, with A and K indices peaking at 55 and 7, and November 22nd at 45 and 6, not descending to 5 and 2 until November 30th through December 6th. Solar flux 75 through November 24th, then climbing to a peak of 84 on December 2nd. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF, microwave DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting along the coast of Peru into Chile, November 18th and 19th. Along the coast of Angola and Namibia, November 18th to 22nd. Along the northwest coast of Australia, all week.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. If you want to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, just a reminder of Program 4 from the Radio Netherlands Archives, produced and presented by Paula McCorry. This weekend, you'll find all the details at our website, pcjmedia.com. Until next time, so long, take care, 73 and 88 to the ladies.